politicians are waking up to the strength of the youth versus
Festival. It's the sacredness of corn. So I've got about a half hour, 45 minutes of the sacredness of corn, and you'd think there wouldn't be that much to talk about corn, but there is. Terrence McKenna said that the plants, we're here for the plants. It's not that the plants are here for us. So it's more like we're here for the plants, and that's why mushroom spores can survive the rigors of space. That's probably how aliens seeded the planet, was with mushroom spores. The aliens are the plants of the universe, and we animals are just here to provide carbon dioxide and stewardship to the plants. So that's what this show is going to be about today on Talk is Cheap on KEPW Low Power LP 97.3 FM, Eugene, Oregon, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio, also streaming online at kepw.org. All right, so coming up, the sacredness of corn, recorded at the Resilience Festival. Thanks for listening, tell your friends. Support independent media. Stop cutting the tree.
relations in the Native way and in many other cultures. I'm going to be talking about, I was invited, just to give you a little background, I was invited, first of all, by one of the organizers to speak about community gardening efforts that I've been involved in since for over 12 years locally. And that's part of the story. But the other part of the story has been my ongoing relationship with my all of my different ancestors and heritages. And one of those is my Native heritage. And being called to be a medicine keeper for that tradition by local elders in the last decade of my life, and how that's affected my work in the community with food and farming and community organizing. It informs it in a way that's different than just the bullet list of this is what you do to create community action, because it's much more ancient than that. And so one of the things I'd like to do is I'd just like to recognize that each of us, as we come here today, we're bringing our ancestors with us, literally and figuratively, literally in our DNA. You come from a very long place away from this land. And so you bring your ancestors. Thank you. And all of us that are here with European ancestry bring that. Native American, Asian, African American. And so whenever I speak of these things, because we're in the presence of sacred medicines with not just sage and juniper, but with food, with corn. Food is a sacred medicine too. And so I like to honor that presence that we all are bringing as we come together, and thank you for coming and listening to this presentation. So part of what I've discovered in growing food is it's an excellent way to build community. It's a wonderful way to bring people together, not just for the work of growing the food, but also eating the food, which is a fabulous thing to do together. And it's one of the high points of, I think, any gathering is, what are we eating? Because that's awesome for me. I love good food. And one of the foods that has, unfortunately, in my mind, been demonized is corn. And corn, there's a Native saying that corn is the mother of us all. That corn is something that has brought people together for millennia. And corn is actually a human artifact. Corn cannot exist without human interaction. It can't grow on its own like other kinds of seeds, like beans, like squash, like tomato, like pepper. It can't grow without human intervention. So it is a created thing that we cooperated together with this plant energy, with this plant spirit, and somebody said, hey, look at that, and then grew it, and then another thing happened, and it became more like this, and more like this, and more like this. And it's a wonderful food. It's a very dense, nutritional food. And because of that, it has the capacity to nurture people very deeply, nutritionally. Unfortunately, with corn syrup, there's a kind of a demonization of corn. Corn is bad, corn syrup is bad. And it's like, well, yeah, it's in certain quantities, and if you're using certain kinds of chemicals, yeah, of course. Corn itself, though, is a very, very important plant. And so being able to grow this plant and use the strains, all of these varieties of corn up here are corn that I've been involved in growing, with the exception of this littler corn. All of these corns ancient DNA that goes back, we don't know how far, actually. It started, corn growing started 10,000 years ago on Turtle Island, in Mexico somewhere. There's an actual place where they're pretty sure that's where corn originated. And so with that information, this corn is ancient, and it's been kept pure. It has not crossbred with anything else. I'm going to pass around this particular variety here. This is called Painted Mountain, and this is a really old corn, and it's been grown, it's kind of been reinvigorated, and it's grown widely locally. And it's a really good flour corn, a really good meal corn. It has good production, it's disease resistant, it's adapted to this area. And so it's a kind of food that we all can actually benefit from, even if all we're doing is growing it to keep the seed. More importantly, right now, besides food production, is the importance of seed production. Because there will become a time, I was at another event, another speaker just a little bit ago, who spoke about the need for being able to have the seed in order to grow at some future time that we don't know. There could be an earth disaster, earthquake, volcano, we don't know, sort of thing that could happen that would disrupt the agricultural systems. And if we don't have the seed available to grow when we're able to then sort things out, it becomes a problem. And so seed that is grown locally and adapted to this area is super important. It's almost the most important thing you can do besides grow it for just the food and the nutrition.
What's the name of it again?
This is called Painted Mountain.
Painted Mountain.
Painted Mountain.
Beautiful.
And the art. Have you ever seen the other varieties of it? It's like psychedelic. It is so incredibly colorful. It has yellows and oranges. These were ones somebody sorted out specifically, these varieties. The information in the corn is not just DNA or nutritional. It's also the stories that go with the corn. And the different people that grew corn in Turtle Island had different stories. And they had different people that were part of the stories and different creatures that were part of the story. And so part of the story, and there's a saying that in the belly of the story is the life of the people. So stories become very important in transmitting information. Sometimes it can mean the difference between life and death. If you don't remember a story and that there was a rock that was shaped just like that, you might not find the water that you need to stay alive. And so stories are really important in Native tradition, in many traditions, in many cultures, that the oral tradition that we've lost from being so plugged in with screen time and all of the ways that technology has affected us, we no longer have that verbatim ability to recall a story, which could have meant the difference between you living and dying. So even with corn, there are stories that are very important about our relationship with it, how it grows, because in those stories are the information about how you grow the corn, when you plant it, where you plant it, how you plant it, when you harvest it, what you do with it. All of these things, they're like nice, beautiful, metaphorical things, but they're actually real survival mechanisms. That's part of the spirit of the story, is being able to connect with the medicine, the plant medicine, whatever that is. With corn, one of the things I remember reading, I have a number of books that have all kinds of corn stories. And this one is a wonderful one, Selu, which is the Cherokee name for the corn mother, and is seeking the corn mother's wisdom. And in it, she talks about when the Europeans first came to the East Coast of the United States, they were overcome with this sweet fragrance that they had never smelled before. And it just went on for miles and miles and miles. And when they made land, it was the smell of corn. Mm-hmm. Was miles of corn growing. And so part of the medicine of the corn is all of the different features of it, all of its, how it grows, how you plant it, how it grows, how you have to grow it with other things, which benefits the corn and the other plants as well as then it, how you harvest it, what you do with it, its nutrition, how there's, and there's been special ways that different people have done this throughout the United States, through all of these many, many thousands of years, and different areas have different traditions. One of the things that I've also been able to learn in growing the corn, I got this corn, I'll show you the corns I've got. This one, I think it's just these two varieties. This is called Narragansett 8-row. And this was kind of honed by the Narragansett people on the East Coast. And this one is called Spotted Eagle. And you can look at both of them. And you can see this one has like little spots on it that are kind of symbolically like an eagle. I received both of these corn seed packages from Flor de Mayo, who is one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers that has a project in New Mexico. And it's called the Seed Temple. And there are three or four people who are the seed keepers for that project, and they do all kinds of seeds. And someone had traveled there for a workshop and heard about the seed and got the guy's name and said, hey, you know, you need to get in touch with this. It's a really awesome thing. They're trying to adapt seed for different areas of the country for the purpose of resiliency, food production resiliency. And so I was given, I think, five different varieties of corn, and I've grown them all out. The Spotted Eagle is what we've kind of landed on as our very favorite with growing. At this particular time, we don't have any Spotted Eagle planted right now. We've kind of taken a year off, and so I'm kind of sad about that, but that's okay. We grew enough for seed, so we have lots. We fortunately have plenty to grow. But one of the things that has happened in the process of working with this corn is all of the stories, all of the prayers, all of the intention that goes with this particular food has come to me in ways that have been absolutely surprising. I think it's part of the medicine of the corn. When I was, it's 2 years ago now, I was getting ready to plant this corn, and I have never been gifted a corn song to plant with. And I asked local people, I asked Kalapuya people, I asked Siletz people, I asked Klamath people, you guys got any planting songs? And they said, well, not really. We don't really do agriculture in the same way as East Coast people or Southwest people. And so they said, we have gathering songs and we have hunting songs, but we really don't have planting songs. And so as I was getting ready to do this planting, a woman who's now one of my very good friends called me up, and she'd heard about our garden project. We have a garden project in the Bethel neighborhood called Bountiful Bethel Neighborhood Farm. And it's right at the corner, practically, of Beltline and Barger, right next to the school district office. The school district has given us up to 2 acres. Right now we only have half an acre. And that's where we were going to grow this corn. And she had heard about this project. It's a collectively run farm, so basically anybody can participate in it. It's open to anybody to join and work as much as they want. You get a portion of the produce when it's all said and done. It doesn't cost anything, and it's a lot of fun and enjoyable. And so she heard about it because she has another project that she works with elders and children. And so she'd been referred and said, yeah, I want to, you know, to participate in this. I said, great, sounds awesome. And then she started talking about her travels down into Southern California and Arizona, talking with her elders and talking with her native elders. And I just got this really just incredible feeling when she was talking about it. And it was almost like I couldn't believe what she said the next thing was. She says, yeah, and one of my elders just gave me a corn song. And I just started, I almost cried. And I said, you know, I've been praying for a corn song. And she said, well, I'll ask my elder if it's okay if I share it with you. And so she did, and it was, and she did. And so now I have a corn song. And so part of what I come to understand with this, and that's part of the relationship part with the plants. So all of the plants that we're surrounded with in our everyday, even this grass out here, for goodness sakes, all of these things are a result of our relationship with the plants. Somebody had to plant that grass and those trees, but they came from someplace. And there's a difference between the wild plants that are outside of our control and influence and all of that. Well, I mean, we are influencing them, unfortunately. There's a difference, though, between the cultivated plants and the wild plants. And even the cultivated plants, we have a relationship with. I don't know how many people have read Botany of Desire by Michael Pollan. It's a really wonderful book about how human beings and plants have cooperated over the millennia. Oftentimes, plants draw us in. The story of tulips, it's like that. We get drawn in by these plants who then basically give us feedback that create this ongoing relationship. Corn is one of those. Tomatoes is another one. Marijuana is another one. Wheat, all kinds of potatoes. All of these plants we have this relationship with. Now, most of us are very divorced from this kind of experience because we go to the grocery store and get our food, go to restaurants, eat our food. At the same time, it doesn't really take, you don't have to have a huge farm or garden to have that relationship with plants. There are plants all around you, everywhere you are, all the time. And so part of it has to do with mindfulness, of course, and awareness, and just being, it's like, well, what is in my yard? What is on my way, on my walk to work, or my drive to work, or when I'm going shopping? What is there? Actually taking a moment to notice that, wow, that's a whole bunch of maples and there's some oaks and things like that. Noticing what's around us. Those are things we're not necessarily keyed into so much. And it does make a difference when we pay attention to those things. As well as paying attention is then if you have the ability to be in an environment where you can be with plants, whether that's your own garden or a friend's garden or even a public park like the Rose Garden down by the river, the Owens Memorial Rose Garden. That's kind of overload almost of rose, but it's incredible. It's an incredible place to experience rose spirit energy because it's like there they all are just pumping it out. Have you ever been?
I'm going to go now.
How many people have been to the Rose Garden? So you know what I'm talking about. It's like, yes, those are cultivated plants. Actually, they're related to blackberries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Roses are related to blackberries. They're in the same family. And so somehow a rose plant enchanted a human and said, you know, don't you think I'm pretty? And the human probably said, yeah, well, let's check you out. Cultivation is a relationship. So that's a relationship that humans and plants have had. That's a beautiful example of kind of the pinnacle of that kind of relationship. Even in your own yard, though, there are all kinds of plants, whether you've planted them, somebody else planted them, or there's some of the strays that kind of wander in from the wilderness. So how many people have mullein in their yard? Anybody have mullein? There you go. Okay, that's a nice, I love mullein. I think it's not a native plant, but it is one that's, you know, acclimated here. It's a wonderful wild neighbor that just don't let them get out of control. dandelions, even dandelions, those are plants that are edible and medicinal. We're able to harvest the roots. They have a lot of medicine in them, the good liver tonic, the greens in spring. Kind of later on, they get kind of bitter, not so good. And the many, many other ones. So that's part of one of the pieces that I think is important. I have a little handout here that I'd like to share with everyone. And this was not written by me. This was written by a coalition of native ethnobotanists who wanted to ask really important questions about our relationship with plants and how that works. And what are some of the important things to consider when we move deeper into our relationship with plants as allies, whether that's as food or as medicine. So part of it is, one aspect of walking in a good way is returning integrity to our relationships with our first relations. And Native people consider plants our first relations. They were here before us. They helped us in so many ways as we've developed. We now consume and use many plants that are made available through methods and practices that lack integrity and harmful to the planet. We may also be guilty of mindless consumption without a spiritual foundation in our use of plants. The questions below are starting points to inquiry, reflection, and conversation as to how we benefit from our plant relatives. These living relationships are real. Let us have the integrity and courage to reclaim a healthy and balanced relationship with this people. And that's the other thing, is that in the Native way, you think of this sphere of living beings as a people. So it is the plant people. It is the stone people. It is the standing. You even call trees as the standing people, the winged people. So plants are an entire universe of people. So what's a plant's name in its native language? That's a hard one. And that takes a little bit of research. And how and why was the plant created? What is its story? That's kind of a cool thing to investigate, is like, what is the story of that plant? Whether that's a native story or whether if the plant came from Europe. For instance, rosemary is a Mediterranean plant. There's some wonderful stories about rosemary. It has some beautiful stories. And so that's that deepens that understanding of the plant. And what indigenous peoples have given original instructions about the plant's uses? Many of the foods we eat that come from here, potatoes, tomatoes, peppers, corn, squash, those kinds of things have original stories about why they were put here, how they were put here. There's usually some person or animal that's associated with them that also is part of that story in medicine. So those are also wonderful things to look into. And do you have permission and understanding to use this plant from the people who protected its place or function? I think this speaks more to things when you're out wildcrafting. If you're gathering herbs or gathering plants, especially food like camas, there's places where people have gathered for a long, long time, and it may not be okay for you to gather in that place. And so if there's any question about that, you know, check in as best you can regarding that. It's not always easy. It's like saying, oh, you know, somebody's Irish, and like, well, tell me about the Irish people. And it's like, well, you're Native. Well, tell me about the Native. Well, you can't do that. And so finding the spokesperson for that land is kind of difficult. So if you have any question, maybe don't gather from that space is what I would suggest. And then, do you have permission to use the plant from the plant itself? This is, did your ancestors use this plant? If not, why? If so, how? Perhaps you have information about the use of that plant from your own family history or your heritage from whatever place in the world you come from. Now, getting permission from the plant, that goes into another aspect of it that I'll talk about briefly, about getting permission. And this is, how does one make relationship with this plant? And I'll talk about that too. And is there a special season that the plant's harvested? And a specific medicine or power that the plant has? Those are things that oftentimes we have to read up on. If we're fortunate enough, we have a friend who's an herbalist or a wildcrafter that knows about these plants and the medicines. It's really, if you have somebody who knows about herbal stuff, it's great to pick their brain because they'll have so much information about how it's used, how it's gathered, what the and the side effects as well. Because plants are not just 100% pure, woo-hoo, never hurt you. There are things that can happen with taking plant medicines into your body that can be detrimental, especially if you have different health conditions. What does a plant spirit look and sound like? How does one specifically connect with this plant spirit? I'll talk about that a little bit more. And this goes into what gifts, ceremonies, and action does a plant need from us to maintain a healthy or right relationship? What protocols or taboos did the plant require for healthy, balanced collection and use? How does a plant say it can be used or not? What are the physical and or spiritual consequences to us for dishonoring the plant and its gift? If you are unaware of the consequences for dishonoring a plant, how are you going to find out? How will you heal relationships with plants that have been dishonored? So this is a way of thinking about the plant people that is mostly outside of our training, our experience, certainly the society at large. I think many people that are gardeners or horticulturists, farmers, do have that already. They have that sense of connection. It's just never been codified culturally. And so that is the real benefit and blessing that comes from finding these ways, whether it's native or whether it's from our own traditions that come elsewhere from our heritage. So making a relationship with a plant is something that's very personal. Sometimes when you're walking somewhere, you may see a plant, a flower, a shrub, a tree, and somehow you're drawn to it. And that's something just to pay attention to. How are you drawn to that plant? What was the first thing when you noticed that you were drawn to it? What were you thinking? What was in your mind? That's a key to what your relationship with that plant is what was I thinking? What was I feeling? What was I going through at that moment when that plant caught my attention, when we realized that, oh, hey, how are ya? So then the next thing for me, and this is part of what I've been taught, is that especially if we're going to a plant specifically to gather medicine, and medicine would be anything that was going to be for our healing, our upliftment, perhaps for sharing in a good way with someone because we know it would be good for them. We have that idea that, or we have knowledge that that is a medicinal plant. So the root of that plant, for instance, is medicinal, and we're aware of that. When we have that intention to do that, part of the reciprocity in Native culture is that before you take something, you have to give something. And so you may, some Native gatherers actually take some of their hair and they cut it and they bury it right next to the plant and that's their offering. Cherokee Way, they take beads, and they have particular colors of beads for particular kinds of plants. So if it's a leaf part, it's a different color. If it's a root part, it's a different color of bark, different color. And they go to the plant, and usually there's a prayer, and different people have different prayers, just like with the corn gathering song and corn planting song. That's a song that you sing when you're planting and gathering. There are songs that are sung when you're also gathering medicine from the wild, or even from somebody's garden, even your own garden. It's a that helps create that right relationship at the same time. And you can make up your own song. I had an elder, in fact, the great grandson of Chief Joseph, who was one of this region's most valiant Native leaders. His great-grandson, Roy Hayes, who's passed away, was a very knowledgeable and tremendous elder. And he knew songs, and he knew ceremonies. And he had a special ceremony every May called the Root Festival. His people were the Nez Perce, came from up on the plateau. They have this whole thing with all these of the camas, and there's so many other things I don't know anything about. And he said every one of those plants had a song that you had to sing, and you had to gather them in a certain order in order to be respectful of their place for the ceremony. And one of the things he shared was, he said, you know, the songs we get from our elders. So for these kind of ceremonies, this is really important. We know what these songs are because they've been passed down for generations. And we know this is how, when you go to gather this plant, this is a song that you sing. He said, but sometimes you're out and this isn't a plant that you know anything about or that anyone has taught you a song. And he said, it's okay if a song comes to you or you just start humming and you feel like you're making relation with that plant, that's okay. And so he sang a song. He said, I'm going to sing a song I made up. And he did. And it was beautiful. He says, that was just my little song when I came across, and he named some plant, and I can't even remember what it was. And he said, but I just felt like that was my song. And he says, it's not official. He says, I might teach it to my grandkids, but he says, that's okay too. So that's another part of it, is that as you're making, what you're doing is you're asking permission. If it's okay, if this plant share its medicine with you, because you're being respectful. And that's one of the things I think that is probably more profound than anything else, is being able to enter that space of gratitude and respect and honor for thee, just like our ancestors. When I said I'm honoring our ancestors, all of our ancestors that are coming in here with us today, you're honoring the spirit of that plant who has been here a lot longer than me, for real. And I'm saying thank you so much. I appreciate this. This is my pitiful offering to you in exchange for you being able to share this medicine with me, to share your wisdom, your ancient knowledge with me. This is my humble offering. And then you need to listen, because sometimes you're going to get a no. And that's really important to pay attention to. Sometimes you're going to get a no. It's like, no, it's not okay. I don't think so. It's like, still leave the offering. Still leave your offering, whatever that is. Many times people will bring tobacco. That's a native plant here from Turtle Island. And they'll put a little pinch of tobacco as their offering. Cornmeal, sage, juniper, cedar. Those are some of the more common things. And then the other is beads. People will leave beads or stones of different sorts. Sometimes they'll make a bundle in a little piece of fabric. and leave that. You may have heard of tobacco ties. And so they'll make tobacco ties or other kinds of herbs in there, or cornmeal. And so as we make that offering and we're thankful for that, we then move to the next phase, which is to gather it, whether that's cutting it, the leaf, or the root. And always only take what little amount you need. Never, you know, isn't that so like modern to like
take everything?
Right. Yes. And because part of what you're doing actually, and this is one of the things, it's not necessarily agriculture, it's more hunter-gatherer thing of when you harvest bulbs or roots or plants, you actually then spend a minute to spread them out so that the area that they're habitating kind of moves a little bit too. So that's part of what you're doing, is you're helping that plant propagate itself too, which came to be something that people were just beginning to understand when the settlers first came to this continent. And, you know, well, natives don't farm. Well, they don't farm like that. They have another way of relationship with the plants. So then, after you harvest it, then be sure and use it as best you can. If you know how to do it, hopefully you've done a little research and you'll be able to do that in the best way possible. For the benefit of yourself with the medicine, if you're making medicine, or if you're using it for a smudge. In fact, on the back page of that, I have a list of plants that I handed you that are combinations for different kinds of smudging. And smudging is a part of a ceremony for cleansing and clearing the air. And this is white sage, and this is juniper, and this is Eastern Oregon sage. I want to say something about the white sage. As much as possible, if you cannot buy this, it's good, because it's becoming endangered on the California coast. And so if you do buy it, if you can get it in a loose form like this, it's more respectful of the plant, and it's not as intense on the plant population. I've heard elders even say that the places that they had gathered are being kind of decimated by the over-harvesting of that plant. And that's a perfect example of people not respecting the medicine and that particular people. So what I have here is this is some Eastern Oregon sage. This is some white sage. Thank you. And this is some cornmeal that was grown and ground in a good way. All these things were gathered in a good way. You are welcome to take, I brought envelopes. You are welcome to take them and use them as you would like. And if you have any questions or...
Well, I've got a question about corn. You said that it's influenced by man. When we were kids, we used to make money tasseling corn. Uh-huh. And I don't even remember why we did that.
Tassel it? Yeah. You mean, took the silk off.
KEPW 97.3. KEPW LP 97.3. FM Morgan, Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Also streaming at KEPW.org. This has been Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ SSD. We've been listening to a lecture on from the Resilience Festival here in Eugene on the sacredness of plants. And the plants aren't here for us, we're here for the plants. Anyway, yeah, I hope you'll make it out to our fundraiser today. Thanks for listening. Thank you. I'm probably going to come in.
Thanksgiving.